This show originally aired earlier today.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The Trump White House has made a number of significant moves on immigration policy this month, from changes in the public charge rules, which was a move that had been long planned, to the sudden announcements that asylum officers in Boston would be moved to the border, and immigrations with deportation deferrals due to severe medical conditions now have 33 days to leave the country. And then the Washington Post reported this week that President Trump suggested he would pardon aides if they broke the law in order to get the border wall built before the next election. The White House says he was joking. That's not even all of it. It feels like a month that has changed the game on immigration policy, even in an administration that has been restricting immigration from the start. So joining us to talk about all of this on the line is Sarah Sherman Stokes, who's the Associate Director of the Immigrants' Rights and Human Trafficking Clinic at Boston University Law School. Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So, Sarah, things really heated up last week when WBUR first reported that U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, or USCIS, notified local immigration attorneys that asylum officers from Boston would be sent to the southwest border with Mexico in order to address the influx of asylum seekers there. And then this week, WBUR broke the now national story of the sudden cancellation of medical deferred action for some immigrants. You know, looking across all of this, a lot of policy moves, big ones in a relatively short period of time, it feels to us like there is something different going on. Does it feel different to you?
I would say yes and no. On one hand, it's important to situate this in the context of this administration's ongoing and pretty relentless war on immigrants, on both immigrants who are authorized to be here, as well as immigrants seeking asylum here and refuge. These big policy changes that you're speaking of are alarming and devastating, but they're also part of a larger protracted pattern of changes that deeply impact immigrants and their families.
So, Sarah, they feel like they're coming at a little bit faster clip in the last few weeks, and maybe in some cases, and we can dive more into this, but maybe in some cases without necessarily the proper planning or preparation for implementation behind them. What's your reaction to that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that a lot of these policies and changes are being rolled out without a lot of thought. When we think about the end of deferred action for people with serious medical and mental health conditions, which you mentioned earlier, this is a plan that clearly was rolled out without a lot of planning. USCIS said we're no longer going to be providing deferred action to these critically ill people, including children. And in fact, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, will be taking care of that policy. We now know that ICE said, we know nothing about that. We don't know what you're talking about. We've reached out to USCIS. So clearly there wasn't any coordination whatsoever. And we're talking about the lives of people who are really potentially at risk if this program ends, which it appears it will be.
Let's talk about those lives, because WBUR's Shannon Dooling spoke with Jonathan Sanchez. He's a 16-year-old from Honduras. He has cystic fibrosis. His family entered the U.S. on tourist visas in 2016. First, they were able to extend him, but the treatment was longer than their original six-month extension, so they applied for this medical deferral. Now the teen says he's feeling stressed and scared that he might actually have to leave the U.S.
If they deny the program, that I need to go back to my country, and I'll probably die. Because in my country, there's no treatment for CF. Doctors don't even know what's the disease. The only ones who can help me are here in the United States.
Rapid change, unexpected change, confusion around implementation of those changes. What does this kind of uncertainty do to the people the changes affect?
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I mean, that listening to that young man speak, is extremely upsetting. It's almost as if the administration, thought, well, we've put children in cages, we've left thousands of people waiting for asylum in Mexico, we've separated families. You know, what more can we do to harm the most vulnerable? And it seems like with this deferred action program, they've found some of the most vulnerable people in our communities to target. And they've done so in a way that, as you say, sows fear and chaos. And I think, unfortunately, that's exactly the point, that if they can make people scramble, if they can increase uncertainty, I think their hope is that people will just sort of quietly leave. But when we're talking about children and families who have lived in this country for years, people who are afraid to go back to their home countries because they're going to be harmed, and people that can't have access to the medical care they need to survive, those people aren't going to be able to just leave the United States quietly.
So, Sarah, you're saying that this, you know, sort of sloppy implementation or this sense that maybe there's a lack of administrative preparedness that leads to chaos, you're saying that's a feature, not a bug.
It's hard to think otherwise at this point. We've seen such a pattern of this administration creating a crisis through whether it be poor planning or just cruelty. They create a crisis. They refuse to take responsibility for the crisis they've created, and then they purport to rescue us from the crisis that they alone created. That seems to be somewhat of the playbook, at least as regards the immigration policy of this administration.
All right. I want to bring another voice into this conversation. Marian Davis is the spokesperson for the Massachusetts Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition. It's also known as MIRA. Marian, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how is MIRA reacting to and responding to this sort of series of changes that have come out in the last few weeks?
We have been pretty much, you know, we are working nonstop on this stuff, and it's really, really hard to keep up because, as you said, it's just been unrelenting, and we were particularly focused on this medical deferred action situation. We work at Irish International Immigrant Center, which sort of broke the story from an advocacy perspective. They are our members, and they reached out to us, and we worked closely with them to start doing media outreach and to organize a press conference on Monday and to also reach out to our congressional delegation and to advocates across the country to help start building momentum about this because, you know, it's shocking. We've come to see, like as Sarah said, we've seen so many horrible things that we keep thinking they can't go any lower. And deporting kids with cancer is actually a new low point. And I think we all think on this team, like, this is a scandal, and it requires scandal-level proportion of coverage and of anger and of outrage and of public uprising against it because it's just they have completely lost any perspective on the humanity of immigrants. And this cannot be accepted. This is not about politics, and it's most certainly not about policy anymore. This is about just behaving in atrocious and beastly ways that
right.
we cannot accept.
Okay, but so Marian and Sarah, how would you respond to people who say that the U.S. not only has to but has the right to limit the number of people that the country takes in and that we have things to do to address the full gamut of immigration policies in order to ensure that they, you know, reflect American priorities?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, that presents us with a potentially a false choice, right? That the choice is either sort of open borders, allow everyone, or engage in the kinds of enforcement that this administration would have us believe are required. And we don't have to choose one of those things. We can have a humane immigration policy that doesn't put families in custody, that doesn't put kids in cages, that doesn't separate families, that doesn't deport children receiving treatment for cystic fibrosis in Boston. But that also keeps our country safe. There are plenty of politicians and advocacy groups that have put together humane platforms for immigration policy. So to suggest that it's an either or, I think is really a false choice. And there is more nuance to be had here.
So, Marian, building on Sarah's point of a false choice, if this were done more humanely, would MIRA still have a problem with the changes that are being made? Is this about how they're being done, or is it about that they're being done?
I think it's a combination of both. I think some things, I mean, there's the medical deferred action program, for example, it's a tiny program. We're talking about, you know, a thousand or so cases get processed every year is our understanding. Across the entire country. It really does not in any way affect America as a whole to have a thousand sick people who would die in their home countries be able to stay here. And they are doing everything by the book. Every single person who gets this particular status is working with lawyers, filing paperwork, documenting their cases meticulously. These are not people who are in any way breaking any laws. They are actually abiding by the law. And I think the problem is that there's this idea now that just being an immigrant is somehow an undesirable and bad thing. And there's a lot of demonization. So I agree with Sarah. I mean, we can be humane and we can be at the same time, you know, a nation of laws and do things by the book.
Sarah, in the last 24 hours or so, the administration has also introduced a rule that would make it more difficult for the children of some U.S. service members and U.S. government employees who live abroad to automatically become U.S. citizens. Is there something sort of, are we shooting ourselves in the foot with that one? That feels counterintuitive, even to the types of policies the Trump administration has laid out around immigration and national security. What's your response to that?
Sure. And I just do want to clarify that there's pretty much no way in which the administration could end this medical deferred action program that I personally would think was okay. I don't want to make it seem
that's helpful.
They just should have done this in another way. I certainly don't think there's any humane way to end a program that is literally saving the lives of people who are, undergoing serious medical treatment. On the point about U.S. citizenship for children of U.S. service members, I think what this is about is a manifestation of this administration's attack on authorized immigration, right? So it's not just that this administration is demonizing and, you know, using lots of racist rhetoric around undocumented immigrants, but around immigrants generally. And I couldn't agree more with Mary and the folks at MIRA that, you know, talking about the ways in which just being an immigrant is sort of a dirty word under this administration. And this latest attack, which precisely says that those children of U.S. service members who are not themselves U.S. citizens, we're talking about lawful permanent residents. I think there was some miscommunication and misinformation about how this was rolled out, which again, you know, goes to your earlier point about the chaos and the lack of planning that goes into rolling out these policy announcements. It does appear, although again, it's not completely clear, but it does appear that this will apply to children of lawful permanent residents, people with green cards, who would have considered to have been residing in the United States even when they were with their parent living abroad for purposes of later naturalizing. And then that no longer will be the case. So what this will do, it will, again, create uncertainty. It will create fear. It will create anxiety. It will require folks to pay for lawyers to get consultations about how it is they can go about proving residency and acquiring citizenship later on. So it will cost people money. And we're talking about people that have, you know, sacrificed their lives and their families' lives to potentially go abroad and serve this country. It is quite, I think, shocking that this administration would go after this group. On the other hand, this administration has made it really clear that they intend to attack both authorized and unauthorized immigration.
I want to get one more question in. Marion, is MIRA doing any contingency planning? Is there something you're preparing for that could come down the pike next?
Our hope is that, you know, we know that there are legal advocates working right now on medical deferred action in particular to file, you know, looking at how to file lawsuits to stop this. But, I mean, this is being fought out on every front. And this is, you know, like Sarah said also, you know, one of the biggest fights that we're having right now is on public charge, which is this new rule to basically, you know, keep out working class immigrants is what it will effectively do. Because, you know, and these are people entering lawfully and all of that. So
sorry to interrupt you, Marion. I got to stop you there. But yeah. Thank you. That's Marion Davis, spokesperson for MIRA. Thanks for joining us at Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
And Shara Sturman Stokes is the associate director of the Immigrants, Rights, and Human Trafficking Clinic at Boston University Law School. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Stay tuned. There's more coming up here on Radio Boston. Boston City Councilor Anissa Asaibi-George says we need to think bigger when it comes to the addiction crisis. We'll hear from her. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.